Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM.
Be very careful, because you only get one shot at this, and colleges will not come back and correct it for you, and so you're going to live with whatever you get for that year for all 4 years, most of the time.
Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
Welcome back to the show, Money Talkers. So good to have you here. This week, we've been focusing on student loans, a topic that is on everyone's mind. Hopefully, you've had a chance to listen to our jam-packed episode with Robert Farrington on the whole student loan debacle. If you haven't, make sure that you go over and check out that episode as well. But in this episode, we're diving deeper into navigating the college aid process and all things FAFSA with Stuart Siegel. Stuart is a nationally respected financial aid expert and founder of FAFSAssist. And get this, did you know that $24 billion in financial aid that the government actually makes available goes to waste each year simply because students aren't applying for it. So whether you're thinking about going back to college, you have kids who are getting ready for college, or maybe you're even just simply thinking about having a child soon, this episode is for you. Stuart shares the right way to value assets, how to negotiate with colleges, yes, it's a thing, why you shouldn't respond to college offers too soon, and how to file the FAFSA the right way. Oh, and we also dive into the complete underbelly of just who is making money with student loans. On to the episode we go. Well, Stuart, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I know there's so much to dig deep into. I kind of want to start here.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, soaring tuition hikes, educational debt being the fastest growing debt category in America today. And most people are just thinking that college is kind of out of reach. And you sent over some really alarming information that every year students miss out on an estimated $24 billion in financial aid. And the government makes this available, but people just aren't applying for it. And, you know, when we think about that combined with we're hearing more and more about the possibility of student loan forgiveness by President Biden, of course, that's all TBD, of course. But I think it's important to first start with an understanding of why are people missing out on financial aid? And really, what is that financial aid? Are we talking loans, grants, scholarships?
Well, what people are missing out on, it, primarily when you hear about this, is the Pell Grants from the federal government. That's capped, I think it's $6,495, which doesn't make a dent at even the least expensive state, public state, you know, institution. So a lot of kids, you know, eighth, ninth, that have been in, you know, junior high and getting into high school, they go, what's the point? They can't afford it anyway. And to be honest, they can't. So the idea that has been put forth is to double the Pell Grant, which would at least make it possible for a lot of kids to be able to at least go to a four-year college, you know, a state school at some of the, because most of those tuitions are ranging anywhere between 12 and 20. So if you throw a student loan in there and a state grant, you'd be able to do it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, thinking about loans, it's just, you know, it's contributing more and more to the debt crisis. And there are, you know, countries, we got Europe and South America and Africa, where people can go to college virtually for free. You know, you've been doing this for a long time. Like, what do you think needs to change to make college more affordable here in the U.S.? Is that something that's even possible?
You know, that's a really good question. It's the $64,000 question. The problem is, it started a long time ago, and it started with Sallie Mae and the colleges. They got together, and the colleges wanted to raise tuition, but they knew parents didn't have enough. So the banks said, well, wait a minute, we'll make money easier to get. And then, because the federal government and all the student loans, they haven't really increased all that much. But in 1994, I think it was, the government said, hey, we'll let parents borrow as much as possible. So, and then that was, of course, through the banks. And so the money was just there, and parents took it because of, you know, they feel that this is the only way for their child to succeed in life, get ahead, is to go to college. And over the years, the push culturally to go to college has increased. And because parents could borrow more and more, and nobody's complaining, because there's nobody behind them complaining, it's just a very small constituency every year. And they get, you know, into it, and the colleges say, hey, we're getting it, so let's raise 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, 7% a year. And so you've, you know, now you've got to the point where college is pretty much unaffordable, in spite of the fact that colleges will say most people do not pay list price. That may be true, but let's face it, if you are a family of four or three and struggling, and you have an income of $45,000 to $65,000, and the government says you have to pay, you know, $11,000 for school, and then the school costs $30,000, for example, and they say you have to come up with another $7,000 So now you're looking at close to 20 with everything, and you can't even afford the 10 or 11. So, and that includes loans to make up the difference. So it's very hard for most families now to apply to afford college, even if they borrow. Now, people ask me all the time about the, oh my gosh, there's $1.7 trillion. Would you believe that most of that is interest?
Yes, I would.
That is accumulated since like 2011. I mean, most of the debt is not current debt, you know, students taking out loans, which honestly, for the undergraduate, we're talking a maximum of first year of $5,500, or at the end of 4 years, $27,000, which on a monthly basis is about $350 a month. If you get a college degree, you should be able to get a decent job that you can afford $350 a month to pay your investment, because that's what it is. If you get a degree, that's making an investment, and that investment will pay. So now it's time to put that money in there to pay for your, you know, to get your investment to pay. So that's kind of
is it the federal government that is ultimately profiting? Like, is it the combination between that and the schools? I mean, is it just so convoluted that it's hard to even kind of separate it out?
Well, the government does actually profit, even with a portfolio that has a lot of delinquencies and defaults. Sure, because the origination fees are pretty high, especially for parent loans. The interest rates are higher than, they just came out, the new ones. So if you're a parent, you want to take out a loan, it's going to be 7.5%. A student this year, undergrad, almost 5%, 4.9 and 3%. This is going back, 2 years ago, it was 2.75%. So these are for students. So they keep going up. They're making money because the Treasury borrows from itself at practically nothing, and or have been for a number of years, and they still charge all these fees. So the government's making their money. And as long as parents and students will borrow, the colleges have no incentive whatsoever from reducing their costs. Some colleges are saying, yeah, we'll freeze tuition for 4 years, and some have actually lowered tuition, but they're very few. I remember when my youngest daughter went to Brandeis, and she started in 2009, and I remember the first bill. You never forget your first private school bill.
Painful, right?
Yeah, the total charge was $53,500.
Wow.
And that was in 2009. I don't even remember what it was when she graduated. But to go to Brandeis now, I believe you're looking at closer to $84,000. And believe me, the education at Brandeis or any other of these private schools has not gotten better than it was, 9 years ago, or however long ago it was when my daughter started. And I guess it's been, to Orange 10 years ago. So what colleges have done is really just decided that we need to keep up with our costs, and they keep building and they keep building, and they get endowments. Colleges are, always fundraising. I mean, as soon as a student gets into that freshman year or fall, they're getting the calls and to the parents and the donors that get the money, that give the money, don't necessarily earmark it for financial aid. A lot of it goes to buildings and programs and things like that. The students never get, and the schools can't give it to them because it's not earmarked for that. It's not just all the lazy rivers and climbing walls, and all that. It's just, a lot of duplication, a lot of, inefficiencies. And here's the scary part, that so many colleges are not keeping professors. What they're doing is hiring adjunct professors. So they don't even work at the school. They teach a class. They might work, depending on the area, they might work at two or three different schools. And they're making basically minimum wage. Sort of like the pilots who do the hops. They make $19,000, $20,000 a year. You're putting your life in their hands to go from Buffalo to Cleveland. On one of these puddle jumpers.
Right.
They get no benefits. They have no investment. in teaching the, you know, the kids, there's no getting to know. The students certainly don't benefit by a relationship, and more schools are doing this to cut costs.
Yeah, I will just say that for the last 10 years, I have taught at a university exactly like you're talking about in Los Angeles as an adjunct professor. And I would pretty much affirm everything you're saying. If we look at my counterparts who are actually full-time faculty and what they're making versus what I was making, it would be very alarming. So yeah, I mean, it's outsourcing at its finest, right?
So I think parents, you know, when they're looking at schools, they should know that, you know, this, you know, faculty to student ratio it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, so they should find out who's teaching your child. Absolutely. Who's teaching my student?
You talked about your daughter at Brandeis. I know you've been in this industry for about 25 years. You're the founder of FAFSA Assist, and you know a lot about this. I'm curious what your story was, because I know there was a kind of a light bulb moment where you said, like, from your college experience to your kids, where you're like, wait a minute, I got to figure this out. Tell us a little bit more about this time.
Well, I went to college when it was I was at Penn State. We went on the trimester. It was $325. I'll never forget this. $325 per semester. So less than $1,000 in tuition. I don't know what it costs to live. You know, my parents paid it. But many years later, when Renee went to Penn State, I had two kids go to Penn State. She was very smart, very high test scores and straight A's and AP and everything. And she got a whopping $2,500 scholarship. I forget the name of it. Apologize for the fake bird. When my first daughter went to Penn State, her top scores and top grades only got her, you know, $2,500, I think, of scholarship. So the rest of it was either loans or we had to pay for it. And it just seemed quite a bit compared to my experience and my wife's experience. She went to another state university in Pennsylvania. She's actually been to many universities to getting her degrees. But it seemed a bit extraordinary. And then our son went, and that was even more. And then as my youngest, Zoe, we were preparing for her in my practice, and I was using a lot of the techniques and strategies that I've developed with others to be able to pay the least amount possible, because 53.5 back in 2009 was a lot of money. We were in the Great Recession. Sure. And, you know, business had dropped off quite a bit. So it was very important, you know, but you go back a year on your tax returns. Then, now it's go back 2 years. But then it was one, and still had a pretty good income. So I had been learning through the process, because I've been working with many other people. So I guess after the first two cost the most back in, you know, the early 2000s, and then I was preparing for number three, I had been working with a lot of people and other parents and fine-tuning my skills, until finally when she went, I didn't pay anywhere near the 53.5. But I saw a lot of other parents who didn't, you know, get help. You know, our neighbors, my daughter was on the soccer team. There was a lot of people knew who I was, but, you know, they're not going to go up to your friends and say, help me pay less for college. They just don't do that. One family, another soccer player who went to University of Rochester did. And the other daughter went to Syracuse, right?
Yeah, but let's talk about these, because you have these five mistakes that you say parents and everybody we're all making regarding college aid. I would love to run down these. I know the first one you say is that they don't know how to value their assets correctly. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big one. Well, here's the thing. People don't read. And they look at these forms, which are really complicated. I mean, there's stuff all over the pages. It's incredible. And the new FAFSA is even worse. They just keep adding all these little links all over the place. So by the time you start to read the directions, they become vague, and you're kind of like blind. You just, everything gets fuzzy. So I had a client this fall came to me with they had already filled out their FAFSA $322,000 expected family contribution. Now, that's the minimum amount a school would expect you to pay. So that student qualified for nothing. But the father said, this is impossible. I don't make that kind of money. What happened? And so I looked at everything and I looked at his FAFSA. I said, well, you put down all this stuff in business and retirement that didn't belong there.
Okay.
So we corrected it and he had an EFC of $600, which qualified him for a Pell Grant, a federal Pell Grant, which is free money from the federal government as well as state grant money because his EFC was way low. And he qualified for grant money from the schools as well.
So what are some of those assets that you should leave off the FAFSA?
Their assets are wrapped up in retirement accounts, like an IRA, a 401k, a 403b, that sort of thing. And they just instinctively put that down. So I see a lot of parents with $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in retirement accounts, which are not to be reported. They are excluded, and they'll enter those instead of zero or just their cash and checking, which would be whatever that is. And then also put in business assets, right, where the exceptions are very clear. If you have more than or fewer than 100 employees, you don't put anything down. Zero, but people put them down. And they might include grandparents' assets, things they just, that would not be reported.
Over-disclosure,
so that's where,
right,
they get in trouble. I'm sorry?
Over-disclosure.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's just what, because you're asked a question, this is what I teach, just because you're asked a question doesn't mean you have to answer it in a way that they expect you to. Be very careful because you only get one shot at this and colleges will not come back and correct it for you. And so you're going to live with whatever you get for that year for all 4 years, most of the time.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is, I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. Yeah, another thing that I want to talk about, you mentioned this, and I think most people don't even know this is possible, is that they don't know how to negotiate for more money. I didn't even know this was a thing. How do you negotiate with a college?
Yeah, the word negotiate for a college, if you're speaking with a college, they would not like that at all. They think they're being equated with a used car salesman.
Right.
So they don't like that. The thing about negotiation, which it really, that's what it is. I mean, I think amongst themselves, though, they understand that's what it is. But a lot of parents will not, either they're not aware that they can do it, or they're afraid to do it. The thing is, in America, we don't negotiate, except for in the car dealership or with your realtor. You know, there's not a whole lot of finagling, you know, handling going on, whatever.
Right, yeah.
We're just not accustomed to it. And there's a great deal of fear among parents. And there's these urban legends about asking for more money from a college. And I don't know where they come from, but one of them is if we ask for more money, the college will rescind the offer of admission. Bye-bye. That's pretty much the big one. And if you do ask for more money, they will dig deeper and give you less money. Well, that's just not the case. Or completely withdraw everything because you ask. If you're going to a private school, because public schools do not do this. They do not negotiate. There's nothing to negotiate. But with private schools, right now, the most of them are happy to hear from students who are asking for more money because it's a buy sign. You know, it's like they're raising their hand and say, hey, we're really interested, but we're not comfortable with what we're being asked to pay. Can you help us? And there's techniques involved with that, but they're pretty simple. And it helps from the outset to be in a position to negotiate. Just like if you were going to buy a car, you'd go to a couple of dealerships, get a couple of quotes, find the car you really like. They're all going to be fairly similar. I mean, you're looking for a particular type of car, just like kids are looking for a particular type of school and college experience. So you collect a few of those, and then you can go to the dealer. You've got something to show. They said, well, this is going to cost you X. Well, wait a minute. Dealer down the street for basically the same car is going to cost me this. What do you think? Well, let me go talk to my manager. And oftentimes, depending on the time of the month and how they're doing, they'll give you a better deal. Well, the same thing is true with the schools. Schools are very nervous from the time they get all the applications, and typically after January through April. Admissions people are going out of their minds because they're afraid they won't get all the students they need to make their class. And they need more to make their class than they even can for capacity, because they know over the summer they're going to lose about 7, 8, 10% of them. So they need a lot more, because if they don't get them all, they're going to lose a lot of money. So they are in a position, or you're in a position to, if you're coming from a position of strength, because you've applied to a number of schools that are somewhat similar, in cost, for example, and you're getting better awards. That's why I think you have to apply to a dozen schools. If you're going to private schools, you need to apply to a lot of them. It's a little more work, sure, but you got to have some place to, look, we got $10,000 here that we're not getting from you. We're more comfortable with this. We can do this. Can you help?
Is this money adding to their student loan debt balance, or is this just free money to get them in the door?
That's a discount. It's a loss leader for the colleges.
Got it.
They got to get you in the door, and a lot of them will do whatever. I'm going to tell you a story here. I could not believe this. This year is kind of the exception. I'm not used to seeing this, but I've seen students with low, 3.0 to 3.25 applying to regional private schools where they were lucky to get $8,000 in merit money and very little grant money, get $22,000 in merit, and then go back and ask for more based on another award and get $29,000, an increase of $7,000. And that's multiplied over 4 years. Wow. So that's $28,000. That's a big jump. I've seen kids get $7,500. They just find a they'll stack another scholarship on top of it, give them a research grant or something, and save $7,500 more every year, $30,000. One student, we sent in a request, the kid didn't get anything from, it was Lafayette College in Eastern Pennsylvania. He didn't get anything. We said, well, let's send this email that we have in our system, and he did, and he got a form back. Basically wrote the same thing in the email, sent it back, and the school gave him $20,000 per year.
Wow.
Just for asking the right way. I mean, you don't go in screaming and yelling and carrying on and threatening. You just go in and ask for help. And, there's a few things to make it, the outcome more likely, positive that you can do. But if you don't ask, you won't get. And they won't take anything away from you if you do ask, and they're certainly not going to rescind your offer of admission. Doesn't happen.
So walk us through a little bit more about the FAFSA for those listening who maybe forgot about it or don't understand it. What is it? Why do you need to file it? And I would assume there's a correct way to do it, right?
Well, here's the thing about the FAFSA. Most parents don't want to, they've heard of it. When the student's getting into high school, they might, know their parents, there's talk about the FAFSA, and people say, oh, it's really hard, and a few people might say it's real easy, but whoever it is, it doesn't really sink in their consciousness until they have to fill it out. People procrastinate about everything, especially when it comes to this stuff. It has to do with money. They put it off. So when they get the form, they're already in a position of fear. And if you haven't filled out a particular form and you realize what's at stake, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars, aren't we? There's a great deal of apprehension, intimidation that parents experience. And if they'd only taken time a year earlier or even 6 months earlier to go over the form, think about it, ask what themselves, well, what do they really want to know? And then maybe get some professional help and ask, well, what do they really want? I've got this. I don't, is that going to hurt me? So getting a little advanced preparation can really go a long way. So that's the first thing. Don't wait till the last minute to understand what's going to be asked of you. Then what you want to know is, well, okay, I've got this form. What do I have to give them? Well, a lot of the information is not that tough. It's this year, they ask about the students, where do they go to high school, what colleges they want to apply to, name, address, social security number. Do they have a job? Do they have any money in their name? Basically the same questions for the parents. So there's not a lot to mess up until you get to those asset questions. And also, well, the number of kids going to college, some people just miss that. And that's very important because that can take that expected family contribution and cut it in half. Although that form, the new one in a year and a half, is going to not, that number of kids in college is going to, whether it's five or one, it's not going to affect the contribution where it normally would cut. If you had five kids, they cut it into fifths all at the same time. The question will still remain, but it will be up to the states if you qualify for a state grant based on your new EFC, which is now called the Student Aid Index. And they'll determine if you get anything. Also, the individual institutions who do recognize currently number of kids in college, it'll be up to them to determine what they're going to do in terms of financial aid. We don't know yet. My guess is the colleges aren't going to hurt you too much on that. I think they're going to continue to keep the same basic policy.
So, I mean, this whole thing, it just all seems so complicated. It feels like it's all set up for parents and individuals to just not know what they're doing, which is probably the reason why you started FAFSA Assist. Tell me a little bit more about, like, how do you help people through this process?
Well, the first thing is, this is a 40-year-old process. I mean, this whole business, it's 40 years old. I mean, in terms of the Higher Education Reauthorization Act. And so there's been a lot of layers of rules and regulations. So they can't help, but they're bigger than the IRS code. I mean, there's more rules and regs. So it does tend to power, just make it almost impossible to keep up. I mean, I'm a member of a couple of organizations that, it's their job to keep me, abreast of what's going on. And it never stops changing. It's incredible the amount of changes that go on through every single year. So to expect a parent to have any degree of confidence, even if they sent one or two kids through college, to be able to do this in the most favorable way for them, to avoid mistakes and delays and everything, it's hard to expect them to do that. So getting, I'm sorry, your question was, I tend to get
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. That's okay. No, that was all really good information. I just wanted you to tell me a little bit about like FAFSA Assist and kind of how you help people.
Right. Right. Well, when somebody comes to us or finds us, we have a lot of self-help information, videos, and that sort of thing where I get to be the virtual financial aid expert. Some people call me guru. Some people call me a college cruise director. I've earned them all over the past 25 years. So whatever you want to call me, that's fine. But what we try to do is help parents. The first thing we tell them, they have to sign this collaborative agreement. It's called the I Promise I Will. And the first thing they promise is not to panic whenever they get an email from the student aid or the college. That's the first thing. And it, as long as they promise not to panic and share that information or take a look to read it for a few minutes, generally there's nothing going on that is a problem. It's usually just a request for information, or it's a blanket email that was just sent to everybody. But we just want people to know that this is kind of a marathon. The more schools you apply to, the more rules, policies, every school has their own. They all have their different deadline dates, which you really should pay attention to. They have different forms. The FAFSA is just one. So we would help them understand the best way to complete that, and our software does that for them. And there's another form called the CSS profile, which used to be called the financial aid profile. It's a College Board form, you know, the good people that bring us the SAT you've heard so much about.
Oh, yes.
And AP and the AP tests and CLEP and that sort of thing. And that form is a lot more involved than the FAFSA. I mean, it asks everything that you could possibly imagine about a family's financial circumstances. It's really detailed and difficult. That's a difficult form, really difficult. So if a student's applying to one of the schools that use that form, there's about 200 of the more competitive schools that do use that. And given what's happening with the new FAFSA simplification, which asks for very little information, truly, the word on the street is there's going to be a lot more colleges using this more in-depth form, which should just make things worse, which is actually, whenever the government does anything for this to make it easier, it always makes it a lot harder. That's just a rule. When they try to simplify something, it just makes it harder. So, that's just the way the government is. So more parents are going to have to fill out more forms. If you own a business, you have a form for that. If there's a challenge or there's a question, you'll have to fill out a verification form for God knows what. I mean, they got a million of them. If they question your assets, you'll have to fill out an asset verification form, an income and asset budget sheet, budget. I mean, everything that you can possibly imagine in terms of forms. So a student could fill, or the parent could be responsible from anywhere from 3 to 6 forms. If there is a non-custodial parent, let's say a parent that doesn't live with that student, now you've got to decide which parent makes more money, who's providing more support to that child, and that's the information you're supposed to use. So if it's somebody that's just giving you child support, and maybe that's enough to support the family, now you've got to go chase them for information they may not want to produce or provide. Same thing with the CSS profile. They have a form especially for that parent, and a lot of parents don't want to fill that out, or they fill it out just as badly because they're not getting help, and they cost their student a lot of money, or cost themselves a lot of money.
You can see like why parents ignore a lot of this. I mean, it feels mind-boggling when you talk about all of the information just that you have to stay on top of that most of us just aren't even aware of. I'm thinking, kind of coming back to the first question, how we started out chatting today was, how do we like bridge this gap so that maybe college doesn't continue to be, more out of reach for people, but it feels like there's a missing link that's happening here. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, yeah, I don't believe the colleges, other than the ones I think I may have mentioned, if there's a few that are holding their tuition for all 4 years, and some have actually lowered their tuition, but they're very few. College, would it surprise you if I told you there's a whole handful of schools that are over $86,000 a year now?
No, it would not, which is okay. Just makes me want to tear up.
The average private school now is over 60. Now, that doesn't mean you'll pay that. A lot of the schools will throw in a, $22,000 scholarship, $18,000, depending on the student. I don't think colleges are going to, come back on their prices terribly. They may discount more heavily. We've seen that this year because of the reduction in applications. I mean, it's been literally a couple million over the past few years since COVID, and they've been going down anyway. So maybe they'll respond to that and cut back, but they still got all these buildings to take care of. I mean, if you've ever been on a college campus, it's a fortune to run one of those things. So where are you going to cut back? Especially if you've been relying on increasing tuition, because a lot of colleges don't have huge endowments. They do rely on tuition to make the wheels go round and round. So I'm not sure that the college is really going to be the answer to that. I don't think, making more money available to borrow is also a good thing to do at all, because so many kids don't graduate and they have this burden of debt, or they do graduate and they don't, they didn't get great jobs that can meet the payments, when they do resume, which probably be towards the end of the year.
Exactly.
So is it that they become more realistic and more proactive in choosing the institutions that they go to, or do they go to community college, but which, by the way, have seen the biggest drop in students? They've been the ones mostly hurt, not the 4 years. But the 2 year colleges, they've really taken a big hit. But if the students are, and the parents look at this a couple years out and they think, well, how do we get the same kind of education we're looking for, and pay a lot less for it? I mean, there are ways you can do it. I mean, one of the things we do, the first thing is, let's find a bunch of schools based on your college capital. You know, your grades, if you have test scores, what are those? What do your transcripts look like? What's your unweighted GPA? What kind of a student are you? And let's look at colleges where you'd be a good financial fit. I mean, you include the personal preferences as well. I mean, you want a good academic and social fit. Kids got to be happy where they are. But there's a couple thousand four-year schools in this country. I mean, you're going to find some. They may not be, you know, an hour down the road. You might be a couple states away, but if you're saving 50% on what you'd pay at home or close to home, I'd say, you know, suck up the being homesick for a couple of months, which is all it is. Generally, it's October through December, and then it's gone, you know, and go to school there. It's also probably a pretty good experience to go to a school in a place where people are different from you.
I mean, Stuart, this has been so eye-opening. There's so much information here, and I could totally see why someone needs help. So I would love for you to tell everyone listening, if they're interested and they want to learn more, how can they connect with you and FAFSA Assist?
Well, the first step is just going to our website, FAFSA Assist. Now, that's an odd to spell it on a website. We're changing it, actually, because people on these kinds of programs can't pronounce it or spell it. So it's the word FAFSA, F-A-F-S-A, and then SIST, like we're only using the 1A for assist, FAFSA Assist or FAFSAssist.com. And you'll find us, and you can get, we have some information you can download right away on some ways to which to get through this process. Really, it's just managing the whole thing, being a little smarter about it, taking some information and taking some control for yourself. I mean, people pay me, I'll tell you, $3,000. And I don't want to take that money to college. If I can charge you $149 or $399 for these services, so you can manage, find the right schools, file all the forms electronically, automatically, help you negotiate all those awards to get the lowest price possible, tell you the best way to borrow money if you have to do that. A lot of families still have to do that. You know, and take that information and get the best possible result. You know, then taking it on yourself. I mean, we're only talking, you know, one or two college applications or Starbucks for a month, you know.
Right.
It's and the dividends, we don't have too many unhappy parents. I've done this for well over 100,000 families, and it's always, at the end of the year, it's one of the most gratifying experiences when we see, well, how did everybody do, you know, the end of April, early May, and we see how our families did, and it's always that's what keeps us going, because we know we're filling a need, and kids who might not be able to afford it, or parents not be able to send their kids to the colleges they want them to go to, find themselves being able to do that. And I don't think you can put a price tag on that.
I don't know about you, but what I took away from this conversation with Stuart is the mind-boggling, dizzying process of just getting into college. I mean, if we don't have people like Stuart out there to learn from, how would we ever know any of this information? I know when I was applying to graduate school, I didn't know any of this. So I'm not planning on having any kids soon, but my heart really goes out to all of you that are having to figure out how to navigate this process. I'll do my part. I'll keep sharing these conversations if you keep listening. Deal? If you enjoyed this episode, do me a favor, share it with 5 friends right now who need to know about this as well. And a big thanks in advance for spreading the Everyone's Talking Money podcast love. I'll see you right back here in a few days.